Today is Tuesday, March 31st. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, an urgent plea from the governor of New York, the state of the epicenter of the U.S. COVID crisis.
Whatever the number is, it's going to be staggering. The number is already staggering. A human life is a human life.
Overwhelmed crematorias in Italy with a COVID death toll has surpassed 10,000. Also ahead, a popular American musician is in critical condition, battling the coronavirus. It's all on today's International Edition. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is issuing an urgent appeal for medical volunteers as authorities warned the crisis is pushing New York's hospital to their breaking point.
As governor of New York, I am asking healthcare professionals across the country, if you don't have a healthcare crisis in your community, please come help us in New York now. We need relief. We need relief for nurses who are working 12-hour shifts, one after the other after the other. We need relief for doctors. We need relief for attendants. So if you're not busy, come help us, please. And we will return the favor.
Cuomo and the governor of California are both moving rapidly to expand their healthcare workforces as the death toll from COVID-19 in New York surged past 1,200, while hospitalizations in California doubled in the last 4 days. While the federal government warned we could see up to 200 deaths nationwide, Cuomo said his plea is a preview of what other cities across the U.S. could soon face.
Is it 100,000? Is it 200,000? Look, does it, whatever the number is, it's going to be staggering. The number is already staggering. A human life is a human life. We've lost over 1,000 New Yorkers. To me, we're beyond staggering already. We've reached staggering. And the only point now is do everything you can to save every life possible. That's what this is all about.
Other states and city officials, including in the U.S. Capitol and neighboring states of Virginia and Maryland, issued stay-at-home orders.
No Maryland resident should be leaving their home unless it is for an essential job or for an essential reason, such as obtaining food or medicine, seeking urgent medical attention, or for other necessary purposes.
The escalating statistics tied to the spread of coronavirus underscored the health risk for millions of Americans across the country. The top infectious disease expert in the U.S. is warning that the smaller U.S. cities are about to witness the rapid acceleration in coronavirus cases that New York has already documented. Meanwhile, President Trump on Monday said that the U.S. is on par with other countries when it comes to testing. He also said the government is sending out more ventilators.
In reserve, we have almost 10,000 ventilators in our line. We have them. We've held back just because we did the stockpile. We didn't want to give them because we don't know where the emergency. This hits. It hits like so fast. It comes so quickly.
Countries around the world and here in the U.S. are scrambling to test populations for COVID-19. New York's governor also earlier talked about that.
Home test or point of care test that can be brought to volume, I think that's probably when you see a real return to normalcy in the workforce.
But as pharmaceutical companies work to develop new and faster methods of testing, they could run into a whole new problem. VOA's Jason Patinkin spoke to Dr. Michael Osterholm, director of the University of Minnesota's Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy, who warns of a looming shortage of reagents, chemicals used in those very tests.
Tests themselves are not just one item. They're really a collection of ingredients, you might say, almost as if you were cooking. If you're testing to see if the virus is present in a swab, to extract that material out of the swab, to then identify and isolate the genetic material that would tell you that the virus is there, and then to present that to whatever kind of detector you're using to say yes or no, it is or isn't there. So these are all gasoline of the car that you need to have. And each test has certain reagents that are really important. Without them, a test is not really a test. And the challenge we have is twofold. First of all, the world is on fire right now in terms of requests for testing. It's like if you were a brewer and you had a great beer you were selling, you could make 100 cases of it a week, and it all of a sudden got a rave review somewhere, and now you're getting 1,000 case a week request, you couldn't fill it. You'd have to build new capacity to make that happen. And so that's what's happening here, is that we just can't make enough reagents. The second thing is that China, as a country, has played a key role in some of the reagent manufacturing, with them being down as they were for several months in terms of most manufacturing activity. It just added to the challenge we have in terms of bringing reagents to the table.
In the last few days, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, which approves medicines and medical equipments here in the United States, they approved this new 13-minute COVID-19 test, and that's created a lot of excitement. Will that still be possible given a shortage of reagents?
That test, like every other test, is going to be impacted. Each company has proprietary information about just how much reagent they can provide or will have available. We have to always temper announcements about new additional testing capacity with what is the reality of can they actually deliver on it. We hope they can. We want them to. This would be a big, big plus to our response. But at the same time, we have to be realistic.
For our listeners in Africa, where the virus is really starting to take hold now, how might this be affecting them?
It's going to affect the entire world in a similar way. And if you're in a low-income or even a middle-income country right now, it means you're going to have a challenge getting some of these reagents and these test kits. There is no such thing as a national market for things like reagents. It really is a global market. And you have a need to almost want to test everybody in the world multiple times over a course of weeks to months. It's going to be really tough in terms of finding the reagents. If you're going to develop, and you should, of course, develop a control plan for your country, for your region, what are the realistic expectations of what you can have for testing materials? How many can you test? And then tie that together with what your plan's all about.
What can be done to either ramp up production of reagents or to use the existing stockpiles in various parts of the world to their maximum effect?
The really major challenge we have right now is between now and May or June, can we ramp up production of these reagents? We can do some of that. But we've talked to a number of companies where they've said they had $12, $15 million and another 6 to 8 months, I could build another plant that could do that. That's not practical in terms of what we need right now. So part of it is going to be using them wisely, figuring out if we only have a limited amount of reagent material for these tests, how can we best use testing? We have seen a lot of testing that got used initially almost as a placebo for the population. Say, oh, don't worry, you can come get your test, just drive through. You know, that was a very poor use of testing. We need to target it. You're going to want to know the healthcare workers, are they infected? If I know I only have X tests in the next 2 weeks, that helps me plan, so I'm using these tests smarter and more effectively to try to control the disease.
That's VOA's Jason Patinkin speaking to Dr. Michael Osterholm, director of the University of Minnesota Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy. Nigeria's two main cities, Abuja and Lagos, are preparing to go on lockdown to help prevent the spread of the coronavirus. The arrival of testing kits donated by a Chinese billionaire is expected to give officials a more accurate reading of coronavirus infections in Africa's most populous nation. But there are also concerns on how the public could react to a jump in infection numbers and a lockdown. Timothy Obezo reports from Abuja.
The lockdown announcement was made during President Muhammadu Buhari's national broadcast. Normal activities in Lagos, Abuja, and Ogun near Lagos are expected to shut down for 14 days, starting late Monday night.
Some of these measures will surely cause major inconveniences to many citizens, but these are sacrifices we should all be willing and ready to make for the greater good of our country.
Hours after the announcement, thousands of citizens stormed shopping malls in Abuja in what appears to be panic buying. Abuja residents like Daniel Yerima say the shutdown is a necessary move to control the coronavirus from spreading.
Personally, I think it's long overdue, and I'm not really satisfied with how the government has been handling the whole situation. But with the president eventually coming out to announce a lockdown, I think it's a beautiful decision, and I hope that this decision would help us control the situation on ground.
However, he has some concerns.
I don't believe many citizens can stay remain indoors for 2 weeks. It's not possible because the majority of the citizens live below the poverty line. Even 1 week, it's not possible for them to remain indoors for 1 week without any income.
Since new testing kits donated by Chinese billionaire Jack Ma arrived in Nigeria last week, more testing has been carried out and more cases discovered. Chinwe Ochu is the head of prevention programs at NCDC. She says the kits are essential to containing the virus.
Our objective is to stop transmission. And to do this, we want to have early detection of cases, early reporting, early case investigation, isolation and treatment, early contact tracing, and early social distancing.
With more than 100 confirmed cases of the virus in Nigeria so far, authorities are working hard and say they are ready to impose even more drastic measures if need be in order to control the spread. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja.
Here are some of the other stories we are following at VOA News. The Trump administration Monday renewed several waivers on U.S. sanctions against Iran, allowing Russian, European, and Chinese companies to continue to work on Iran's civilian nuclear facilities without drawing American penalties. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo signed off on the waiver extensions, but couched the decision as one that continues restrictions on Iran's atomic work. Florida officials have arrested the pastor of a megachurch after detectives say he held two Sunday churches with hundreds of people and violated a safer at-home order to limit the spread of coronavirus. The county and governor's orders require gatherings to be fewer than 10 people to limit the spread of COVID-19. A live stream of Sunday's 3.5-hour church service showed scores of congregants. A painting by Dutch master Vincent van Gogh was stolen in an overnight smash-and-grab raid Sunday on a museum that was closed to prevent the spread of the coronavirus. The Singer Lauren Museum east of Amsterdam said that the Parsonage Garden at Nieuwenen in spring 1884 by the Dutch master was taken in the early morning hours on Monday. Stay with VOA for all the latest on the coronavirus pandemic and much more. With the Italian death toll from coronavirus passing 10,000, the country's crematoria, especially in the northern region of Lombardy, are overwhelmed and are having to transport bodies to crematoria and other regions. As Sabina Castelfranco reports from Rome, more families of coronavirus victims are choosing cremation over burial for fear of catching the virus from the dead.
The number of corpses arriving at crematoria in the north of Italy has doubled since the coronavirus outbreak began, and the plants in the north of Italy are overwhelmed, even those that work 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Altair is Italy's leading company in crematoria, with 17 plants mainly in the north of Italy. Michele Barinelli, spokesman for Altair, said this emergency situation has caused a level of saturation in the plants that has never been seen before.
Vengono cremate le salme per le quali il defunto e i familiari hanno espresso.
Marinelli said cremation takes place for all the corpses for which the dead person or his relatives have requested it. The problem now is, he added, that in some areas of the north of the country, cremations have exceeded 50% to 60%. That is, for every 100 deaths, 50 to 60 cremations are requested. Marinelli said in areas like Bergamo and Brescia, where the number of dead has been particularly high, army trucks had to be called in to assist to take the corpses to other regions where they could be cremated. Relatives of those killed by COVID-19 are also unable to grieve for their loved ones as they would like to.
Al fatto di subire un decesso in famiglia che già di per sé.
In addition to the death of someone in the family, which is in itself dramatic, Marinelli noted that there is also the impossibility of being able to bid farewell to them by holding a funeral. He said this is a situation that Italy has never experienced. Since the outbreak of coronavirus in Italy, the government has put a stop to funerals and religious ceremonies in an effort to stop the spread of the virus. There is no ban on burials, but many families choose cremation instead due to the slim but not impossible chance that the virus from the dead body could still infect the living. Even families who choose burial are faced with a difficult situation. Italy's cemeteries are as overwhelmed as the cremation centers, with the backlog of bodies to be buried growing by the day. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
United Arab Emirates Crown Prince Mohammed bin Zayed spoke with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad by phone over the weekend to express solidarity over the ongoing coronavirus crisis. Some analysts are saying the call may also signify support from the UAE for reintegrating Damascus into the Arab League, from which it was expelled in 2011. Edward Urenian reports for VOA from Cairo.
The UAE's Crown Prince Mohammed bin Zayed took a fresh step over the weekend to improve ties with Damascus in a phone call to discuss possible humanitarian aid for the Syrian government in the face of the increasingly dire coronavirus crisis. The Crown Prince wrote in a tweet that he had assured President Bashar al-Assad of the support of the UAE and its willingness to help the Syrian people. Humanitarian solidarity during trying times, he added, supersedes all matters, and Syria and her people will not stand alone. The UAE's Minister of State, Zaki Anwar Nosiba, told Arab media that the call was purely humanitarian in nature. He says that Sheikh Mohammed is looking beyond narrow political considerations in light of this exceptional crisis in order to help humanity as a whole, since we are all one family and must cooperate with each other. A Syrian opposition TV station, however, claimed the call was politically based, given the UAE's interest in playing a role in rebuilding Syria and its concern over Turkey's growing role in the country. Former Iranian President Abul Hassan Bani Sadr tells VOA he thinks the UAE has been trying to distance itself from Saudi Arabia in recent months as well, changing its policy in Iran, Yemen, and Syria.
In general, you think the shows on the Saudi and the Emirati.
He says that the UAE has been quietly changing policy in the region, making overtures to both Iran and Syria, in addition to distancing itself from the Saudi-led war effort in Yemen. The UAE, he adds, does not have the same interests as Saudi Arabia and is revamping its strategies. The UAE reopened its embassy in Syria in 2018, but the weekend call by Zayed to al-Assad was the first of its kind since ties were originally cut in 2011. Some Arab analysts say Abu Dhabi is also supporting a quiet effort by Iraq and Lebanon to allow Syria to retake its seat at the next Arab League summit, due to be held in Algeria. Theodore Karasik, a Washington-based Gulf analyst, tells VOA that the UAE has been working on how to best bring Assad and Syria back into the Arab fold, especially when it comes to reconstruction. He says that the big problems in Syria are refugees and health maintenance, and Damascus is now apparently receptive in terms of humanitarian aid and medical monitoring, given the coronavirus crisis. Paul Sullivan, who is a professor at the U.S. National Defense University, tells VOA that the UAE has been a huge contributor of aid to Arab and other countries for decades. He argues that their leadership has a difficult relationship with Assad, but they see that the COVID-19 situation could be a complete catastrophe in Syria and that it could affect the entire region and beyond. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
The 2020 Olympics in Tokyo will now kick off on July 23rd, 2021, 1 year later than the original July 24th, 2020 start date, which was postponed due to the pandemic. President of the International Olympic Committee, Thomas Bach, said Monday that the new dates were chosen to safeguard all those involved with the Games while mitigating the spread of the virus and also taking into consideration the global sports calendar, which has already been upended.
We are all humankind. We are in a very dark tunnel at this moment in time. And we do not know how long this tunnel will be. But we are confident that with these Olympic Games at this new date, then we can be a light at the end of this dark tunnel. And we can therefore give hope to the athletes of the world, but also to the wider public, that there is something happening there next year, which can unite the world. And as Prime Minister Abe said, unite the world, then hopefully in a celebration of humanity for a victory against this virus.
Bach said there is no blueprint to follow as the IOC and Tokyo 2020 organizers work with international federations, venues, and sponsors, to name a few, as they reshape the Games to be held a year later than initially planned. The delay is the first in the 124-year history of the modern Olympics and was also a huge blow for Japan, which invested $13 billion in the run-up to the event. You're listening to International Edition. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and the artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour. Oh. Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews. Ooh. Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world. Ah. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. Elmo, Rooster, and Cookie Monster are doing their part to help keep kids safe as the coronavirus pandemic grinds on. The beloved Sesame Street Muppets are featured in some of four new animated public service spots, reminding young fans to take care while doing such things as washing their hands and sneezing. One of Elmo's signature songs, the toothbrush classic Brushy Brush, has been updated to Washy Wash. The new online videos were launched last week as part of Sesame Workshop's Caring for Each Other initiative to help families stay physically and mentally healthy during the crisis. The family of iconic American singer John Prine says the singer-songwriter is critically ill and on a ventilator while being treated for COVID-19 symptoms. A message posted on Prine's Twitter page Sunday said, "The Angel from Montgomery singer has been hospitalized since last Thursday, and his condition worsened over the weekend." Prine's wife and manager, Fiona Whalen Prine, earlier this month said that she had tested positive for the coronavirus. She said the couple were being quarantined and isolated from each other.
Dreams were lightning, thunder were desire. This old house would have burned down a long time ago.
Show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. We thank you so much for listening. On behalf of our producer, Jackson Mungagne, I'm Lori London in Washington. Please take care and be well.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
This is VOA News via remote.